it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Let me know when we're rolling.
We are rolling.
Oh, we're rolling. Oh, we're rolling.
We're rolling,
dude.
That's
all. Oh, we're in.
We're in. We're in it here on the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Jeremy Piven. Jeremy, you've done it all. And now you're doing more than doing it all. I don't know how to start, ever. I don't never know how to. Seeing you in an alley is throwing me off, but I also feel like, as an actor, as someone who started on the stage, you know,
yes,
you are someone who, you know, has to use your environments. I'm sure you started in those black box theater days when there were no sets, right? And you had to truly use your imagination and assimilate, I think is the word, to your surroundings. Do you feel like there's a spot that you need for Jeremy Piven to go to feel truly comfortable? Or are you such a chameleon because, you know, again, I'm going to fly around here, but going from the stage to now back to the stage to do stand up, which you're now traveling the country doing and deep into the thick of it and have put in all the reps. Is there one place when you're not on stage that you go to, like an alleyway that you're in right now in Colorado Springs, to decompress?
You and I decompress on the road together. Many times
in cryo machines. Let me just say what it.
By the way, I asked our man one time. I said, "Listen, I'm playing a role where my character is much younger, and do you have any advice?" And he said, "Oh, absolutely." He goes, "You have to fast." He goes, "I go, okay, no, I'll fast." He goes, "That's the fountain of youth." I go, "Done," because I need to look a lot younger. And he goes, "Because I'm thinking, okay, you know, they have intermittent fasting, 16 hours, 18 hours." He said that I needed to fast for 3 days. And I was like, brother, my people went through the Holocaust. You know what I mean? Like, I want a sandwich. Yeah. I'm not going to fast. Could you fast for 3 days?
Fuck no. Dude, even when, you know, truly, look, in the thick of my Yom Kippur days, which for the non-Jews, you know, that's when we repent for our sins by what is it, 48 hours? Not even to not eat or drink.
It's really 24 hours.
It's really 24. I'll be honest. That was a lot as a kid, especially a fat kid in Seattle when it's during the rainy season. You know, I mean, it was always a roll of the dice with fall weather in Seattle when Yom Kippur fell.
Yeah.
So if I couldn't even go outside to distract myself and I'm indoors with the TV, and what goes with the TV if you're a fat kid? Snacks. And if I can't have snacks, I mean, it's just, it was double trouble. But yeah, I don't know. How many years?
It's a great way to introduce Jewish kids to religion. Just starve them and then make them feel guilty and you know, repent for their sins. It's interesting. You brought up, like, you know, in the beginning of your intro, what's like the weirdest kind of, I've had, you don't understand, like, when I started in Chicago theater, we were doing a play. I started a theater company with John Cusack called The New Criminals. And we were doing a play and the cast outnumbered the audience.
Oh, my God.
And yeah. And I was playing a role in Major League. Remember that movie a million years ago?
Yes.
Major League. OK, so I was playing a role. And so I used to drive to Milwaukee County Stadium and then back for the curtain. And I remember I just barely made the curtain and I was playing the wild man of Borneo, who is a man who is, they found him in the jungle. And so I had no clothes on and I had war paint on and I just sprinted on the stage and looked out and saw, you know, I usually head into the audience and do some madness. And I did. And then they got up and left. And then we had, the 11 people in the audience, half of them left. So we were left with a few people at the very end. So, you know, I come from a place where, you know, I've seen these rooms that are heavy lifting.
Do you miss your theater days? Like, I'm always fascinated by people that had such a, have that be such a big part of their start and, you know, and to transition to film and TV and now stand up, like, which I'm sure is filling that. It's why I started stand up because I was doing so much theater, not as much as you had done, but high school and college. And I was like, I still need that live fix. So what's a way I can get that immediately without, you know, having to try to find a show to get into and get into one, right? Here's a show I can do right now, even if it is for four people at midnight. Like, how often are you thinking back to those days with CUSAC and be like, man, we should get the band back together and put on another show? Or is that like chapter of your life kind of putting on pause right now?
You know, it's this journey right now, as you know, more than anyone, you know, fulfills so many needs.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're on the road, you're performing all the time. It's funny, I went back to do a movie recently and I thought, you know, I was going to be rusty because I've just been doing stand up. And what's interesting is one informs the other and fuels the other. I mean, you know, from going back and forth now, you're doing another rock project. I couldn't sleep last night thinking that, you know, how do we make more money for the rock? And so I want to thank you. No, seriously, I want to thank you for really just making him more prolific, because we got the young rock now, right? And, and hoping we're gonna have the old rock,
dude. Yes,
the Rock of Ages. Right. The Rock of Ages is
Rock of Ages.
It's gonna be,
coincidentally, it's based on his life. It's just they did, you know, they made it seem like it was about a whole different, you know, time period. But it's, you know, you just got to do some digging and really understand what the story, where it came from.
Absolutely.
Would you do a musical?
We had a real nice clam bake. No, I wouldn't. I would not. I would not do a musical. Thank you, though.
By the way, cut to somebody sees this and takes that little clip and is like, hits you up and is like, Jeremy, we're doing Wicked 2. Even Wicked. Electric Boogaloo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait. Okay. So you're you're in Colorado Springs right now. You've been hitting the road. You've been hitting the road hard. Tell me about. I'm not sure how many people are familiar with when you made stand up a priority, a career shift, and what you've been loving about it. Because I think I sat down with you pretty early into it when you just were like, "Yo, can I pick your brain and just kind of get an idea of what I'm headed towards," which I thought was smart and awesome, because shit, I would have loved that. I think maybe 2-3 years in, I had people go out of their way to give me any sort of, I don't know, even if it was advice, but just kind of like some sort of reassurance from somebody that's doing it, that almost even knows you a little bit, to go, yeah, you're not making a mistake. Like, you can do, you know, and we'd known each other very, you know, briefly at that time, but I was just like, yeah, man, this is the fucking, you know, like the move. And then seeing you like months later and being like, oh yeah, all the pieces are there. It's now just, what's great about stand up now, it's just the reps and the work. And you were like, yeah, well, I'm down to do that part. So let's go. What got you into
that?
Yeah,
I mean, I talk about the fact that, you know, people want to know why I'm still single, because I'm 200 years old and it's not cute anymore. And I tell them that I've been married to my work.
Yeah.
You know? And then my work decide to see other people. And so, you know, so you have to like explore other avenues. And the reality is, you know, I come from an improv background. I come from Second City, sketch comedy. I mean, that's all part of my background in Chicago and all this stuff. So I've done all these other arenas and lanes. And so this truly is a different end, same engine, different gear. Which is much easier said than done. And as you could tell, I was asking you a million questions, and I, as you can attest to or not, you have to put your ego aside.
Oh yeah.
You know, and just talk to people and ask questions and try to figure it out. And that's what led me to my podcast, How You Live in Jay Piven.
Yeah.
Nice transition. Thank you very much.
Professional alert.
Yeah. Because a lot of, you know, when I would sit down with all these people, Tom Segura or Jamie Foxx or Tiffany Haddish, and initially it was, I was going to put together some sort of a documentary about stand-up, and I realized we've had a lot of those.
Yeah.
And all of those conversations have led to this podcast that I've just dropped. And so, and I'm loving that journey, as you know. It's just fun.
Yeah, it was a natural transition for you because, again, knowing so many people from doing so many fucking cool projects. I mean, when we were on our way to that cryo place in Arizona, and you just generously were sharing stories with me and Sandy Danto, and it was just like, you could even see and hear in your voice, you know, and I don't know how much you are like reminiscing or just remembering details. It's like once you do so much shit, it's like you end up telling us some Seinfeld stories that felt like you hadn't told them in a hot minute, which I thought is always cool when you can kind of trigger something in someone and have you sense in us the enthusiasm of like wanting to hear some shit. And then, you know, you could hear it in your voice being like, all right, let me kind of make your guys' day with some cool ass stories from something you definitely loved.
It wasn't even that. It was, to be honest with you, I really hadn't told those stories. And
oh, wow.
No one, you know, I was telling you that I was on the Larry Sanders Show.
Yes.
And I run into Mark Hirschfeld, who's the casting director. And he says, oh, would you like to audition, you know, to play George on Seinfeld? And I had never seen the show because I was living in a pool house without a TV
while
I was a series regular on a TV show because I'm a dummy. I didn't have a TV. So I was like, and I'm such a hungry actor. You never turn down an opportunity. So I went and auditioned and had met Jason Alexander. And so I did my Jason Alexander impersonation and I got the part. And it was probably the best way to meet all of them because I met the Beatles without knowing they're the Beatles.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Yeah.
And they were amazing anyway. So I had a great time and I, you know, was a part of something incredible for a brief moment.
When you're in Chicago growing up and you said you got in a second city doing sketch and improv, is it almost like if you have the acting or comedy bug in you, is that just a move? Like when you're fortunate enough to be around it and have family that's in the theater world already, like, was it just an obvious, like, all right, cool. Like when I get to the appropriate age, second city is going to be a part of the journey.
Well, I started on stage at the Piven Theater at about 8 years old.
Wow.
And so, I was butchering Chekhov and I was butchering all the greats from a very early age. And so by the time, you know, you leave college at 23 and I went to NYU and studied theater and blah, 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 you know, I immediately wanted to get into, cause I was watching Saturday Night Live and huge fan. And so the move is to audition for Second City. So yeah, that is the dream. That's the ultimate dream. Or my dream was really to be the first Jewish linebacker, but they don't have any 5'8" Jewish linebackers in the NFL.
Not
I don't
yet.
Know why.
Not with that attitude.
Not yet,
see, everyone that gets close just talks himself out of it. He's like, dude, there's no way I'm going to make it. But there's not enough.
Right.
I mean, I think we have maybe, I don't know, count them on your hand, Jewish athletes that have really made a splash. Every time someone, I do a joke about that with, you know, not being any really powerful NBA Jews. And people always come up to me after the shows and go, Jordan Farmar or the same, somebody I've never heard of. And I'm like, that's what I'm talking about, man. Jordan Farmar is fine. But like, I'm talking like somebody that really, you know, is like, I can't, you know, gets, you know, a lot of, you know, media attention because he can't play on Shabbat. So he takes off a game four of the finals. You know what I'm saying? Somebody that's really,
right,
you know, dedicated. Like if, you know, if Michael Jordan was like, dude, it's, you know, it's Sukkot. Like I always said I'm not playing on Sukkot. And a lot of non-Jews, again, are like, what the fuck is that? That sounds like,
well,
something.
No, listen, we got some heroes. We got Sandy Koufax. We have the
For
great
sure.
Julian Edelman just retired.
Right.
They're out there. They're out there, my friend.
But I'm talking NBA, though. Find a basketball one for me. Amari Stoudemire converted and then blew out his knee. So it's like that fucking didn't do us any favors.
Let me tell you something. I got my second bar mitzvah in Israel in front of Amari Stoudemire.
What?
I have pictures. I'm going to send you pictures of us at the Wailing Wall. He watched me do my Haftorah portion. I swear to God.
This sounds like a Make-A-Wish situation. How did you get Amari Stoudemire to come to your second bar mitzvah?
You know, we had a group of athletes and actors and just an incredible group, George St. Pierre and whatnot, and we all went to Israel together, and we're in the Dead Sea. It was like a Make-A-Wish. It was incredible.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Are you a man? What's up, dude? Are you going bald? Sorry, 2 out of 3 men will experience some form of hair loss by the time they're 35. Shit, I'm 39. Well, you know what? If my shit starts to go, that's just my fucking journey. And more than 50 million men in the U.S. suffer from male pattern baldness. I got buddies that have gone bald, family members, good friends, good comic friends that have gone bald. And look, there's only 2 FDA-approved medications out there that can prevent hair loss. And Keeps offers both. What is Keeps? I'll tell you, Mom. Keeps offers a simple, stress-free way to keep your hair. Because look, keeping your hair is something we all want. Nobody wants to be seeing their own reflection in a pond off their head. If you sign up for Keeps right now, you're going to get convenient. Keeps offers convenient virtual doctor consultations and medications delivered straight to your door every 3 months so that you don't even have to leave your home. The cost is low. How much? Well, treatments start at just $10 per month. And Keeps offers generic versions, okay? The packaging is discreet, so that your neighbors aren't like, hey, what's going on? You lose your hair, you're like, fuck you, Rob. And the results are proven, okay? Keeps has more 5-star reviews, which is huge, than any of its competitors. Look, prevention is key. Treatments can take 4 to 6 months to see the results, so act fast. And if you want to act fast and start turning your shit around and getting that head full of stuff, and by stuff I mean hair, it's ready to take action and prevent that hair loss. So go to Keeps.com, KEEPS.com/lastnight to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's Keeps.com/lastnight to get your first month free. Keeps.com/lastnight. Time to fill that head up with some hair.
Yeah, I know you're a big Hoops fan, big Chicago Bulls fan.
Yeah.
What's this movie? I mean, your relation with Jamie Foxx, I know, goes way back, but is it All-Star Weekend? Is that movie still on the horizon?
Well, Jamie's been we were filming it the evening that Trump was elected. Wow. And I'll never forget it. I was one of the only white boys on set, which reminds me of how I grew up.
Yeah.
Cuz I grew up in this. No, I'm not just saying that.
Oh, for real?
That's not a joke. So I don't know if I've ever had a better time. I mean, that cast was, it's a terrible cast. It's like Jamie and Benicio del Toro and Robert Downey Jr. and Eva Longoria. It's a cast you don't want to see.
Boo.
They're just filled with who wants to?
Yeah.
No one wins.
Fucking.
And Jamie's been editing it for 4 years, and I think he should take more time.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, I do. Cause I think when we're 70, you know,
put it
that's
out.
The time to, yeah, put it out.
Yeah,
exactly. Just real quick, you know,
and you got to be featured in the whole Last Dance experience. That was fucking crazy.
Yeah. I mean, to show you how badly I wanted that, they came to me and I thought it was a joke. And I was like, you know, they're like, send us 1 30-second clip of any funny story you got or any story of, you know, you and you know, being a Bulls fan, whatever. So I sent them 14 30-second. And by the way, that's cut down.
Yeah.
I had to cut it down to 14.
For sure.
You know, and I just wanted to go 1 for 14. That's it. Let me just go 1 for 14. And I did.
One.
I made it in and I'm trying to do a bit, you know, like, and it, you know, it was fun and it was an honor. It was incredible. I watch that to this day, and I think it's important for people to see, because there was no social media then, and you know, there's not a real reference in real time for what MJ was doing, and you know, the rest of his players are really honest. Like they said, he's an asshole, and you know, he is filled with tough love, and MJ was the first one to say it. Like, this is who I am, and this is what I believe it takes to win, and you either are with me or against me, and you know. It worked. it worked for him. And it was just beautiful to see. It's so rare to see that because everyone's on their best behavior now. Everyone's doing some sort of performative gesture. They're a keyboard warrior showing that they're on the right side at all times, you know, and this is a guy going, this is who I was.
Was he a hero to, I mean, everyone that lived in Chicago?
Every time I showed up someplace, he'd be like, oh, fuck, you just missed MJ. And I was like, what's going on? I just never saw him ever, like, ever, ever. And then, you know.
Like, where were those places? It'd be like a Panera Bread or like a fucking, like a, you know, like a hot tub, you know, factory. Like
a hot tub factory.
I don't know. I don't know where you get a hot tub.
Yeah. I don't either, but I would like to go to a hot tub factory with you. I think we've been to one. If I mean, you think about it, we were.
I would love to watch.
We've shared hydrotherapy together.
Yeah, that's as close as you can. I would love to watch an indie movie where you play a struggling hot tub salesman in like the Midwest. You ever see Cedar Rapids? I love that movie.
So good.
And so you is I don't know what the deal is. If the marriage is falling apart, what's going on, but you're trying to get, you know, maybe you inherited the hot tub business. I don't know. I'm spitballing here, but there's just, I immediately just see you as this guy that we're rooting for. That's fucking maybe puts his whole family in a Winnebago and is like, I need to fucking do some grassroots marketing to get people back on board with hot tubs.
Yeah.
Maybe the depression hit and that's what fucking, you know, or maybe
I think me traveling town to town trying to get people into my hot tub is not creepy at all. I think that's a great idea.
I'll email you a treatment tonight.
That's a great idea.
All right. You know, and I can sense this.
Bro, that's amazing.
And here's why.
The reason I have this because I I've got tattoos. My neck tattoo I had a Irish Pride neck tattoo that just went away. Because I just got done doing this movie with Terrence Howard where I play a generational racist from Southie, from South Boston.
Holy 1974. Shit.
During the busing, dismantling integration, segregation situation.
Wow. By the way, say that 10 times fast. Really, sounds like a theater school vocal warm-up. The fucking interrogation.
Theophilus Thistle, the unsuccessful thistle sit there, unsuccessfully sifted 3,000 thistles through the thick of thy dismantling segregation bus 74, dismantling segregation. Sorry.
Did you hear the news about the two Jews who lost their shoes on the cruise? Pubic puke poop. So many.
Okay. We're back.
Wait, that's dope. Terrence Howard and you. That's a killer combo. I can't wait to see that.
I'll tell you how that came about. I ran into him on the street and I'm just one of these people who, you know, everyone's always playing it so cool, but I have no problem just going up. You're the same way. No problem saying, hey man, I really love your stuff. I just, you know, why not? So I went up to him and we were both young and hadn't really done much. And I was just telling him what a great actor I thought he was. By the way, my battery is at a certain point, it's just going to shut down.
Great.
So I say we just keep going.
Yeah.
In honor of the Jews.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it'll be a Hanukkah miracle.
Dude. Yeah. Whatever we got is whatever we were supposed to get. Sound good?
There you go.
All right. Perfect. Well, then let me pick up the pace here. We get it. You and Terrence Howard are boys. Next question. So can't wait to see that. Jer, you know, again, so many comedies. I mean, from Seinfeld to Ellen to Larry Sanders Show to fucking PCU to old school. I mean, it's like you know, and then one of my favorite movies and one of my favorite parts of yours, quite honestly, it's Serendipity. Like, you're fucking flawless in that. And I think that movie is just very special. And you and Cusack have the type of, you know, I found out years later that you guys were even homies. And I'm like, oh, duh, because that was a true, like, you know, you want to see that type of friendship in any movie between fellas. But just especially for what that story was and who you were to him, it was like, I don't know. Is that extra special having rapport already built in? And is that easier for you?
Way easier when you grow up with someone and, you know, we grew up in the works together. So we were, you know, doing, we were on stage together doing, you know, improv sets, sketch comedy and whatnot. And so we understood the rhythm and a lot of that stuff wasn't scripted, and it was a blast. It was one of those things where at the time I remember auditioning for it, not telling him, and then calling him up, and I was just so excited. And yeah, that was, you know, it's one of those fun romantic comedies that have kind of people still talk about for some reason.
Yeah. When you're doing all these comedic performances, was there ever a time when somebody, Ellen or Cusack or somebody, that then said, like, have you ever done stand-up? Because were you that funny guy on set too? Like, or were you just all business? I'm sure in Entourage you were all business, but I mean, on all these, you know, shows where there's seems a little bit more looseness and there's not so much, you know, where you have so much of the meat to take care of.
You know, I've always been such a fan of it, starting with Richard Pryor. And it just seemed like this insane proposition to transform the space by yourself. Like, because, you know, when you're doing sketch comedy, you have everyone there with you and yeah. you figure it out together. So we just never, it wasn't something in reach. You know what I mean? It just wasn't something that we thought we could ever do. And we were always making each other laugh and doing impressions and fucking around at all times. But it was never like, but I remember the first time I did stand up, my agent said, there's something called, you know, Just for Laughs, this little comedy festival.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, 10 years ago. And so I thought, he's like, you should do it. And I trusted him. And I go out there. I had a buddy of mine and we went out there and checked it out. And so we go, let's go check out the venue. We go the night before. And my buddy goes, what's going to be asked of Jeremy? What's going on here? They said, oh, okay, well, it's film live. And I was like, oh, film live. Okay. And Jeremy will get up and do 20. And we were like, 20 what? They're like, 20 minutes of what? Of stand-up. 20 minutes of stand-up on live television.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he'll do a quick five around each one of the comics.
Holy
and his
shit.
Face just went white. And he's just like, oh, okay. 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 And then, so we went out to dinner and he goes, all right, here's the deal. You're going to tell me a story right now that you think it's just tell me a funny story. And I told him a story about taking my mother to the Golden Globes, and we ran into Meryl Streep, and my mom literally froze and couldn't move and couldn't speak.
Whoa.
It was just like this, because my mom just, you know, she's been my acting teacher since I was a kid.
Yeah.
We love Meryl Streep. Anyway, so he goes, okay, here's the deal. Forget about doing stand-up. You can't learn how to do stand-up in 24 hours. He goes, first of all, you have to play into what their perception of you is. They all think you're Ari Gold. So at various times, you're going to get phone calls and text, and you're going to just keep celebrating yourself with, you know, various offers and whatnot. You have to play into this misconception. We don't have any time, and you're going to continuously try to tell this story. He planted himself in the second row, then you're going to throw me out. And we figured out a way to cobble 20 minutes on live television.
Wow.
And I've never seen it, because with what I know now, it's the scariest thing in the world. And ignorance was bliss, because I just did it. So it wasn't stand up. It was just like surviving.
Dude, the commitment on your part. I mean, and I feel like that's been a big part.
I had no choice.
Yeah. Well, you did have a choice, but you chose, I feel like, and it's a second nature move for you. And I feel like it's always been this. If you were on the stage since you were fucking 8, which is crazy to me. I mean, especially in stand-up, because I've seen you just go, you commit to stuff. And that's one of the things I think we talked about, where it was like, and I think that's something that most comics, and you know, I'm 15 years in, still try to challenge yourself with, like, whether it's a new bit or you're in the pocket on stage riffing on something, just to fucking stay in it and not bail, because, you know, you're going to be mad at yourself afterwards. You don't get to fully see how that bit was or grow. You only take steps backwards if you don't go for it. And, you know, I just think that that's an easier said than done trait. But I feel like you've had that for a hot minute. And I'm sure that, you know, and you've told me filming Entourage how much for a character like that, you, I mean, the confidence level, I think, just for you, Jeremy Piven, is already at a sweet spot. But I mean, you tell me, you're taking that up a notch for Ari Gold. Yeah. I mean, how much of that are you like, yo, nothing's going to phase this guy? Do you dissect the things pre-show of like, all right, here are the times when this guy's going to maybe show signs of, I don't know, true humanity or not weakness, but where he can, where his buttons can get pushed to where he can kind of, you know, reveal a softer side?
Yeah, I mean, Doug Ellen wrote a brilliant script, and I, in a real interesting way, I think he might be the real Ari Gold.
Oh wow!
Even though it's really truly truly based on Ari Emanuel,
right,
obviously, who runs William Morris Endeavor and bought the UFC and is this kind of titan in the entertainment industry, and so it's based on him. But the therapy scenes were kind of taken right from Doug's life, you know, and that's why they felt so real. So if you just invest in all the Gibbons and throw yourself in, I was in good hands with that dialogue, and I had to, it was my job to make it all feel improvisational, when the reality is that he was, you know, really looking at every word and making sure that, you know, it was kind of like your Haftorah portion. You can't start riffing on it.
Can you imagine improv Hebrew?
I do some improv Hebrew in my set.
Oh my God. All right. This is not the way to pitch people to come to your shows. The last 10 minutes is improvised Torah readings. You're like, Jesus Christ. All right.
Well, no, I mean, it's because I grew up and I was the only white boy. And so I was a terrible bar mitzvah student. And the only way to learn my Haftorah portion was to rap it. So I, on stage at a certain point in my, I don't really do it anymore, but I would rap in Hebrew.
Dude, all right. Well, now you got me back. My interest is piqued.
Yeah.
Rabatan,
Nibare, Yehi, Shimado, Nai, Mea, Rach, Mea, Taviad, Alam, till the sweat runs off my ball. Bring that beat back. Come on.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying this episode. Obviously, it's a very difficult time for everyone right now. We're all challenged in finding a day-to-day routine that makes our lives consistent and awesome. And if there's something that's interfering with your happiness right now or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp is a professional counseling service online, private, and it's so convenient. I've used it for a little bit now. It's truly the only way that I've found to help get my own issues dealt with on my own time, at my own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your licensed professional counselor right now. They're specialized in depression, anger, stress, anxiety, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief or relationships, sleeping, which I have a lot of trouble with, trauma, self-esteem. Anything that you share with them is confidential. And guess what? If you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, at any time, you can request a new one for no additional charge. There's 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states, available worldwide. And again, there's 4 ways to communicate with them: text, chat, phone, and video. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. It's available on any desktop, mobile web, Android, and iOS apps. Schedule a video or phone session, generally weekly, unless your therapist schedules more, unless you just are really not sleeping and need to get some additional chats in. There's broad expertise in the network, which may not be locally available in many areas. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. It's secure, it's convenient, it's professional, and above all, it's affordable, all right? It's truly the most affordable option I've found. So right now, all ALN listeners are going to get 10% off your first month with a discount code AboutLastNight. So why not get started today and start making some changes for the better in your life? You deserve it. So go to BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that you'll love. That's BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. BetterHelp.com/AboutLastNight. And get 10% off your first month with promo code AboutLastNight. And now, back to the episode.
By the way, I'm in an alley right now. Imagine someone just hearing me.
That was my next question. Who's the closest person to see whatever the fuck you just did was? That's awesome. That's always the best. Are you when? How many of those little things in the show were thought out or just in the moment? Like, there were so many specific things not on paper, like the way that you held your BlackBerry and tossed it in your hand when you were running into the elevator, or the way you flung open a door to the conference room, or the way that you sat down to start typing, or the way that you looked up from the computer and did a double take when you saw a client or your wife coming into the office. Like, all these things. You know, I feel like Steve Carell is also a master at this with The Office, where it's just you guys both do so much that's just not in the script. And it's, I don't know if it's thought out or is it just instinctual once you get so locked into who the character is?
Yeah, I mean, if you are locked in, and I mean, this will sound very incredibly pretentious, so forgive me, but if you're locked in and you have the givens of the scene and all that kind of stuff, and you throw yourself, it's just like, you know, you were talking about committing to any bit. You're just fully committing. And if you're even thinking about vanity or looking ridiculous, you're fucked. You just throw yourself in and you just are as present as possible as that character. And that's it, man. With that particular character, I studied a form called commedia dell'arte, which is the first like, literal form of acting where they had like kerosene lamps and white face. And it was a million years ago. Tim Robbins, the brilliant actor who I'm sure you've heard of, my teacher.
Oh, wow.
And he taught me the form, and you just commit and you're fully committed emotionally. It's like you're at a 10 at all times. So that's what that character was. He was fully committed every moment. And so, you know, you just invest fully. I started Second City a million years ago with guys like Chris Farley, who was just a physical heathen, yeah. You know? And so, you know, you just swing for the fences, man. You know, that's it.
What was it like being alive during that block of Curb and Entourage on HBO, and how many people out of the woodworks? Cause I feel like that was, again, you know, TV now has become an even bigger thing than it was, but that was a time too, when truly, I mean, every Sunday night, that might be the last time I truly sat down on a night and was like, I'm not going to do an open mic on this night. I'm going to make this my chill night because I've got a block of TV that I like fucking have been waiting for all week. And you know, I'm sure we had a little bit of time after that where there were still shows like that people treated with such high regard. But man, that was a crazy special time. And I just want to know what that time was like to live through, as far as like, you know, do you have old math teachers hitting you up or fucking people from, you know what I'm saying? Because it was just a bonkers time for TV, and you were part of it in a big way.
Yeah. You know, I guess because there was no social media, it was just prior to all that stuff. I had no idea. You know, it wasn't like I was. You know, now you understand in real time how it's doing.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't like that at all. I remember my first like inkling that it was kind of doing well was some people asked, hey, man, can we come to your house and I'll watch it on a Sunday night? And I was like, yeah, you want to? Yeah, cool. I didn't. OK. And so we would watch it in like a group. So that was the only way I knew. You know what I mean? It's just we didn't have a way of, I had no idea, which I think is really healthy, to be honest with you.
1000%.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't like go to restaurants or sporting events and people wouldn't be like, are we good or Lloyd or scream Lloyd? You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, no, they definitely say like, I'm a douchebag because of you, bro.
Nice. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Which is, you know, my work is done.
Yeah. 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 Do you have a favorite? And I'm sure this is, you know, a broken record question, but because, you know, for me, like you said, those therapy scenes, to me, those were some of the best scenes, because in one in particular, when like you're trying to pitch your wife on trying to buy the business and how it's, you know, good business and just there's so many layers and levels to it, dude, where you're just like, and I'm going to butcher, but where you're like, I, you know, want, you're like, no, I need like all the, and it's just so it goes from 0 to 60 and you're looking at it and there's so much love and you're trying to convince her to fucking go in on this. And you're like, my judgment is never clouded when it comes to business. It's good goddamn business. And then she's like, all right, like do it. And then you're like, cool. And then you start the look in your eye of like, wow, she's got my back is so powerful. And then you go to the therapist, you know, can we fuck in here? It's just such a great scene where there's so many emotions. Would you get more up for those or like, I don't know, big boardroom scenes? Like, was there ever a particular day where your juices got extra hyped up, you know, or a special guest star or?
You have to get up for all of it.
Yeah.
There isn't a moment that you can phone in like this interview, Adam.
I'm glad you said it, dude.
No, you know what I mean?
We'll record the next one.
You know, like the cliche of like athletes, no days off or any of that stuff.
Right.
You know, you just fully commit because you never know like what could be a special moment and you want to fully commit to all of it. And like I said, it was all mapped out. The dialogue, the Gibbons, they're all there. You know, when Larry David shows up on set and your hero is there, and it was the one time in a decade of Entourage where we improvised. And I just asked him, what's the scene about? And he was like, no, don't worry about it. And
wow.
So he wouldn't tell me what this, nothing. They just said, here's your mark. You meet Larry here. You'll end up here. You'll see drama here. And then you and Larry will end up here.
Wow.
And so as Larry walks up to you, and it's like your dream. It's a dream. It's like, I don't understand. You know, you said you didn't have tickets for the game. I look up and you're on TV. You're at the game. And then so I just have to just immediately in character start relating to him and explain why I didn't get him tickets. And it's like a dream come true. It's so fun.
Was that because
that was amazing?
Was that because that was when you were going to get him? It was like, well, if we're going to get him, we're going to do it the way he wants to do it and is accustomed to acting, right? It's not having a script.
1,000%.
Yeah. That's incredible, dude. Has there been someone over the years that's from all of your success, dude, and even now with stand up, like that's come out of the woodworks or, I mean, an old friend or somebody that's really, you know, I'm always curious that because everybody experienced that for good or for bad. I mean, shit, there's a kid that I grew up with, well, that lived in my neighborhood and I never really liked him, but I was always cordial because that's how I am. Like even this kid was like, you know, I remember he'd like always give me shit for not smoking cigarettes when I was like 10 and just, you know, he just had a bad vibe, bad attitude, but I was always nice. I'd still let him play in our pickup games in the neighborhood, but he hit me up on Facebook last night and sent me a message. I blocked him, but he's after this, but, invite him to the block party. And he goes, starts it off by going, I don't like you at all, but I find myself laughing when I watch your shit. So that's something, right? Please don't respond. And I just messaged back, I hope it gets better. XOXO. And then I blocked them. Now, do you have people like that that was my dad, by the way. But do you have people like that that hit you up that are like, holy shit, man, I always remember when you were like, you know, at NYU or, you know, I don't know if you had day jobs prior to getting in the biz, but like people that just along your path.
I was performing at an Air Force base for prisoners.
Whoa.
For Second City. And I was in the touring company and I went to the bathroom and I'm in the bathroom and I leave and there's a guy being escorted in and it's the dude that robbed my house and killed my dog. And there I'm face to face with Julio and there he is. And Julio and I fought in high school. And we fought while we were both I was dressed up for Halloween. Remember the Warriors? I had face paint on, you know, and I literally, and you know, when you get into a fight back in the day, you take your shirt off.
Yes.
And you fight.
Yes.
And, he was a gangster, a real gangster. And I see him, and this is after I knew he had robbed my house and killed my dog. And I'm looking at him and I just have that moment of like, what do we do? I have to be on stage now. You know what I mean? So do I start unleashing on Julio in the bathroom or do I get on stage? And obviously I got on stage, but I'm here to tell you when you're on stage performing in front of someone that evil, you're not in the right space to create. And it was just a real lesson in, you know, I mean, we already know this. You have to be totally present and confident and in that place where you want to just, you know, to create on your highest level.
Yes.
And I was just unwatchable for that, but it's very difficult to perform for someone like that. That's not the question you asked me.
And I'm love sorry that story,
I veered off into that strange story.
Way better response.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. As we've talked about on the show before, look, we're all trying to find out what's right for us in life, in and out of the bedroom. But relationships should add value to our lives, especially under the sheets, with the windows closed, the candles on, and the music at full capacity. So why don't we think the same way about our sex toys? That's right. Ladies, fellas, this ad is for you, because we all like pleasure, and it just comes in different forms and shapes and sizes. And Dame Products, D-A-M-E, Dame, is a woman-owned sex toy company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved vibrators. Founded by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops toys with the help of real humans and couples like you. They're closing the pleasure gap and helping the world one vulva at a time. Their vibrators and accessories are made with medical-grade silicone, smart design principles, and lots of love, earning glowing press from the New York Times, W Magazine, and many more publications that love to see you feeling good. Now, look, whether you're a couple looking for an extra boost where it matters, you know what I'm talking about, wink, wink, you know, urethra, wink, wink, you know, clitoris. Which, by the way, when I first heard the name Dolores, I thought it was clitoris, and then it made me think how funny it'd be if someone was named clitoris, but then people kept saying Dolores because they were assuming that her name's not clitoris, and then the person had to correct them and go, it's actually clitoris, my parents were hippies. Now, look, whether you want that boost now or in a couple days, your journey of self-exploration sexually is your journey. So we are sure that you're going to want to earn a spot on your nightstand with a Dame sex toy. I recommend the Ava. It's a couple's vibrator giving you clitoral stimulation during penetrative sex. That's a tough word to say. Penetrative. During sex, its flexible wings tuck under your labia for a snug fit. Holy shit. That is descriptive, but sounds like a lot of fun if I had a labia. And the best part, Dame offers hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is literally guaranteed. Seems like there was a missed opportunity for a joke there. They should have had the returns be within 69 days. Get it? All right, I'm 10. So, look, go to dameproducts.com/aboutlastnight for 15% off site-wide today. That's amazing. Everything, 50% off. Go to dameproducts.com/aboutlastnight. I've already ordered some stuff because, look, you got to keep things fresh. You got to keep things exciting. You got to keep things interesting. And we all want pleasure. So go to dame.com, D-A-M-E, products.com, dameproducts.com/aboutlastnight today for 15% off site-wide products. Get that vibrator. Get that stimulation. Get your clitoris up and locked and loaded. And, fellas, start giving back to the community the way you should have been from the get-go. All right? And now back to the episode.
All right, give me a positive outcome. Any like old, you know, teacher or, you know, somebody that you worked with or a mom's friend that always had the hots for you, you know, like somebody that just that you really, you know, appreciated you.
Well, you mentioned my mom. She's first of all, you're one of these people who I've watched, like your crowd work is incredible.
Thanks, brother.
You're so welcoming to everyone. You're just a fucking savage, man, because you're just peppering them with love before you crush them. And well, you're always like, oh wow, that's an incredible name. It's amazing. What do you up to? Oh wow, that's so interesting. And you know, it's just a festival of love. And then you drag him into the deep waters. It's just very, well, it's very funny to watch.
It's the hit him and hug him rule. You know, it's like you got to fuck with them because everybody's got to get fucked with. And but, you know, you don't have to be a total dickhead about it. And I try to hopefully convey that because that's, you know, that's my favorite type of it. When like, I don't know how you are with people that bust your balls. There's always got to be a little rapport for me. So if I don't know these people in the crowd, getting a little bit of, even if it's a couple sentences of just like, what do you do? Oh, cool. And like being on board with it and letting them know that I'm not, you know, celebrating is the right word, but just that I'm not out to get them. And also, you know, just in getting more comfortable on stage and with silence, gathering more info has been a great asset, because, you know, I have been so in the past quick to be like, shit, there's no laughs. Fucking say something funny, instead of actually listening and trusting that I can build a moment, even if it is a minute in, you know. But
exactly. Yeah. I've learned a lot watching you, and it's crowd work is an art, man. And you can't, if you have to just stay after it. And that's definitely a missing piece in my puzzle for sure.
Well, you're getting after it, dude. And I've already seen leaps and bounds in the last couple of years. And I'm sure that's
right. We did.
Oh, go ahead.
No, we performed, in the round out in an alley recently, speaking of alleys.
Yes.
at the Supernova.
Do you love that?
Which is just so fun.
It's a great spot, right?
Love it. I love it. It's just, you're in the round. It reminds me of growing up and doing theater, and I just love it. But you have to understand, people yell the craziest shit to me because they think they want me to yell at them, and they think they want me to go bad on them, but no one really wants that.
No.
You know? Tell my wife she's a rusty cunt bucket. You know, sir, we're in front of a Cinnabon. Sir, I'm not going to.
Yeah. It's too late. I have a rusty cunt bucket cut off at 7 p.m., sir. wait, so in the spirit of you kind of, you know, adding these new arsenals to your weaponry, the podcast, How You Living with Jay Piven.
Yes.
Official drop date is?
Yesterday.
Perfect. And
it's out. It's out there. And
great.
I've gotten to mix it up with some incredible people. And as you know, it's just so fun. You know, you just, if you're genuinely curious about someone.
That was my question.
Then what's better?
Yeah. You have.
I'm sitting there. I'm talking with Jorge Masvidal, you know, the Cuban Jesus, game bred. Fastest knockout in the UFC. And I just remember that he had this transition where he went into the jungle, and then when he came out, he started just crushing everyone. Mm. And so I asked him about that and how his entire life changed. It's like, I'm just genuinely interested in all these people, like how Jamie Foxx made the transition from stand-up into acting.
Yeah, man.
Does he miss stand-up, and what's going on with that? And
wow, cool.
And it's just, we basically, you know, our job is to hang out with people we're curious about. So
yes.
It's kind of amazing.
And I saw you got Mark Cuban on. I mean, I'm fascinated by that dude, man. I mean, and even in those clips you posted about him talking about basketball is so, because he truly is a once in a lifetime type owner, somebody that's just that much of a fan that wants to be down shooting with them and gets that involved. And, you know, has kind of really changed the dynamic of how involved an owner can be and the personal stuff. I mean, you hear from, you know, like even I think it was Dirk's retirement, how much, you know, Cuban, you know, means to him and what he's done for him. And it's like, you know, when you give a shit and you care enough about that, which is rare in sports, to have an owner that truly, you're like, he's not down there shooting hoops just because it's a fantasy kid thing, which for sure anyone would do that and understand that. But it's because he's also trying to like be like, yo, I'm here. Like, you got me at your disposal. And I was like really, really impressed by that. So I can't wait to listen to that one.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, the people feel so comfortable with me that they just let their guard down.
Right.
Like at one point I just said, I played a douchebag. And people think I'm a douchebag. You're an actual douchebag.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know, baby, but I'm good at it. And he just starts like, he just starts taking a victory lap. And it's just like, people aren't afraid to be exactly who they are when I sit down with them. And that's always been the case with me for some reason, people. And I'm honored by that they feel comfortable with me, because I think they sense that I respect them. And I'm curious about them. And then, so there's a level of trust. And I think it's the same with you. People probably feel the same way with you.
Oh, yeah. Also, you're now my 6 degrees of separation from Cuban. And I do want to get on Shark Tank. Maybe you can help me out with that. I've got an idea for a grilled cheese maker that also jerks you off in the shower. This is something that, you know, I need to send off like to get the prototype. But, you know, if you want to loosely pitch that to him next time you're, you know, sending him text.
I think everybody wins with that.
It's combining the best of both worlds.
But by the way, it's so brilliant. You put it out into the universe, so you have to get after that right away. You know what I mean? It's so good.
I feel like there's no sarcasm with that from you, and I feel like that's just all full on support as a friend. All right, Jer. Yeah. So How You Living with Jay Piven is out now. Amazing guest, amazing conversations. It looks fucking great, which is big for pods. No one's calling in on a cell phone, so that's great. Jer, I want to close this out with something that I don't know if you've done before, but Inside the Actor's Studio was a great favorite show of mine. RIP the late James Lipton. I would love to close this out with a 10-question questionnaire to get to know, deep dive. Oh, and we lost him. What is that? Dude, the timing on that is perfect. I think his phone was going to die, and it fucking died right before we closed out. You know what? That's, hey, TBD, you know, you can't have everything. That's a great example that life ain't fair. And also, that's a great teaser for I guess, when we get him back on the pod. But, well, there he was. There he was. Is he coming back? Oh, that's just me. All right, we're still going. Guys, hope you enjoyed this episode with Jeremy Piven. Go check out his podcast, How You Living with Jay Piven. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter. I believe he's just Jeremy Piven for all that. Let's check it out here. Jeremy Piven for all that. And go see him on tour. He's out there doing stand-up comedy. You guys have been great. I want to give a quick shout out to my man DJ with his Zoa zero sugar, zero carbohydrate, carbohydrates, no sodium, a little bit of sodium, but it's just the best energy drink out there. I can't start my day or finish it without it. Also, a quick shout out, they're not a sponsor, but cheese, I love it. It's good, everything in moderation, it goes great. I'm toast, it's good. Good with tomatoes. I like this by itself. You don't have to dip it in anything. And come see me in Atlantic City this Saturday, July 24th. Two shows, 7:30 and 9:30. And going to have a blast. And then Seattle, end of August. Tons of shows around town in L.A. And then I go to Australia to do season 2 of Young Rock in October. And so if you guys know any good steroid people trying to fucking beef up, get that full-on Vince, fucking, you know, got to get those Popeye arms. I'm already starting the process, but, you know, everybody needs a little boost. And sometimes that boost could be something that's not legal. All right. Thanks for listening. Have a good week. Peace.